I'm JP Tuesday.
And I'm Kiki Cannon. As lifelong Disney fans, the work of countless talented Disney creatives have shaped our lives.
Now, as the Disney catalog expands, we're taking a journey through film and television to discover if that spark that shaped us as children lives on in adulthood.
Does your favorite Disney media still cast that same spell? Join us as we find out. We are
Rewatching the Magic. Hi, Kiki.
Hi, Tuesday.
This week, we are talking about the movie Big, the Tom Hanks film from 1988. The movie that, not his first film, but this was the movie that cemented Tom Hanks as a box office draw. And this movie was very popular. This movie was very well acclaimed. The number four highest grossing movie of 1988. Losing only out to Good Morning Vietnam, Coming to America, and Who Framed Roger Rabbit. Not bad company, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, got Tom Hanks an Academy Award nomination.
Mm-hmm.
Possibly his first.
I think.
Yeah. Did not win. But, you know, pretty good to be nominated.
Yeah. So while I was watching this movie, I was reminded of another movie, a movie that actually came out about 3 months before this movie did. Now, I guarantee no one's going to remember this movie, but I have to mention it. And it's a Disney movie. Disney did a movie called 14 Going on 30. And in that movie, it was very similar to this, in that it's a 14-year-old kid that becomes an adult and has a bit of an adventure. The difference is, while this movie is the wish, this kid does a wish and he becomes big through magical means. In the Disney film, it's science. It's a growth accelerator where the kid becomes an adult. And he does this for the sole reason because he has a crush on his teacher and he becomes an adult so he can go out with his teacher. And I know people are going to say, you're making that up. That's not a real movie. It is. It's not on Disney Plus. I think this is one of those movies that Disney wants to forget exists. But
yeah, they supposedly this movie was based on an Italian film called De Grande.
Mm-hmm.
And the two people who wrote the movie had seen it and then kind of sat down and were like, hey, what if we made like an American version of this?
Yeah, James L. Brooks was working on this movie of The Simpsons fame.
Yeah, well, the thing is that the two people who wrote the movie were Gary Ross and Ann Spielberg. And yes, that is the sister of Steven Spielberg.
Hmm.
Gary Ross also wrote Pleasantville and Seabiscuit. So, I mean, he's very well known. Originally, Steven Spielberg was going to direct this, and then there were some conflicts in his schedule, including the fact that he had just had a kid. Mm. So then it kind of bounced around and eventually ended up with Penny Marshall directing it.
Penny Marshall's a great director.
Yeah, I mean, really, she did some great movies. But, yeah, so that's kind of how it ended around. When it was under Steven Spielberg, he wanted Harrison Ford to be the main character.
I can't see it.
Yeah, I can't either. I don't think it would have had the charm. I like Harrison Ford as an actor, but he's a bit gruff.
He's just,
you can't imagine him as 12 years old.
Yeah, he's too serious of an actor. And that's not a bad thing, but Tom Hanks was at the time mostly known as a comedy guy. He could pull this off. And a lot of other people were considered for the role. Kevin Costner, Steve Guttenberg, Warren Beatty, Dennis Quaid, Jeff Bridges, and John Travolta.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say that this movie would have bombed if any of those people had been the star.
Yeah, again, no disrespect to those actors, but there's just a charm here with Tom Hanks. Again, Tom Hanks, known as a comedy guy, perfectly plays the role of a 12-year-old boy in a grown man's body. It works. I mean, it's one of those movies that you cannot imagine anyone else being in this movie, except for Tom Hanks. I mentioned 14 going on 30, but it's weird that this was in a weird year where there was a lot of age-changing movies. Some of these movies we've kind of mentioned when we talked about Freaky Friday, like Father, Like Son, 18 Again, Vice Versa. All of that, again, this with 14 going on 30 and Big, all movies that feature a kid getting put into an adult body. And three of them are Freaky Friday ripoffs. So a lot of people had the same idea for a movie.
I mean, that does happen a lot in Hollywood. Mm. You know, we talked about it before when we talked about, like, A Bug's Life and then Ants and, you know, things like that. I mean, there's a lot of things where studios just kind of put similar movies together at the same time to try to one-up each other.
Mm.
And of course, this was originally a 20th Century Fox movie. So, you know, if Disney's doing, you know, the 14 going on 30, then of course Fox can do Big.
Yeah. And the popularity, there is something here that became popular because of the movie. And that is the Zoltar Machine. The Zoltar Machine was created specifically for this movie. But due to the popularity of the movie, it became an actual arcade machine. About 20 years after this movie came out, someone bought the trademark to the Zoltar Machine, made real Zoltar machines, and sold them to, like, arcades and boardwalk places. I actually saw a real Zoltar machine when I was out in Santa Monica a couple years back, pre-pandemic. And it was very weird to see a real Zoltar machine in the wild, as it were. You can buy one. They're about $9,000, but you can buy a real Zoltar machine if you want one.
I mean, it would be cool to have one, but not $9,000 cool.
I don't need a functional Zoltar machine.
I mean, not unless it actually grants wishes.
True. Because everything became a stage musical, there is a big stage musical. Big the Musical premiered in 1996. I saw a YouTube video of this. No, not every movie needs to be a Broadway musical. Big is one of them. Apparently Fox was considering a Big television series in the 90s and then again in 2014. Again, I don't know how this would work as a TV series.
I don't think it would.
Because when it was brought up that we were going to do this movie, that we wanted to do this movie, you know, we kind of mentioned it last week. There's a bit of tugging your collar here in terms of... And that as a TV series just brings more uncomfortableness into it, where this is, yes, this has the, this person has the appearance of a 30-year-old man, but it's still a child in a grown man's body. And this grown man having relationships and relations. I mean, what? It's Fox movie, so I can talk about this. Emma Stone's new movie, Poor Things. Have you seen it?
Yeah. I mean, I haven't finished it, but I've seen most of it.
Yeah, isn't that like the brain of a baby and a grown woman?
Yeah, it really is.
So that, and that is not a child-friendly movie.
No.
I'll just put that out there. So that's already kind of an uncomfortable movie, just based off the premise itself. So, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of stars of 80s cinema and 80s television here. I mean, so I forgot he was in this movie. Surprise, John Lovett's cameo.
Yeah. I had forgotten he was in this too. It's been a while since I've seen this. And Deborah Jo Rupp is in this. I had forgotten about her being in this.
Yeah. That 70s mom.
And, of course, Robert Loggia. That's R for Robert Loggia. O for, oh my God, it's Robert Loggia. Sorry. I just always loved that bit.
John Hurd, a.k.a. every 80s villain.
Yeah.
Sorry, he is.
but, I mean, it's so good at it.
Yeah. Elizabeth Perkins in here as well.
As the woman who is, if she has any sense, absolutely traumatized by this entire event.
Yeah. I think that's enough of the cast. Unless there's someone else you want to mention.
No.
So yeah, let's kind of get into this while we have that thought. So we have our main character, Josh. And Josh does not like his little life as a 12-year-old kid. He has his best friend, Jared Rushton, as Billy. We've talked about him before because he was in Honey, I Shrunk the Kids.
Yeah.
But he plays Josh's best friend, Billy. They talk about girls, and there's a bit of a cringeworthy moment where the teenage boys talk about looking under girls' shirts. But anyway, we have Josh, who has a crush on one of the girls at his school. It's never explained whether this is an older girl or just a tall girl, but he has a crush on her. Eventually, this all leads to the local carnival, where he decides to take his shot, talk to her, and go on a carnival ride with her. But at the same time, this girl seems to have a thing for another boy. He's older. He's 16. He drives. But he's going to take the shot anyway. But luck not be with Josh this day. He is too short to go on the ride. She is not, and she goes on with this older boy, which we do see later as they are driving in his car later in the movie. Poor Josh. You kind of feel for the kid. He had, you know, he tried to take a shot, so, you know, good for him. It just did not work for him. So eventually, depressed and just lower than low, he ends up walking into this arcade at the carnival. He sees the Zoltar machine. He puts a quarter in. He makes the wish, I wish to be big. And then we get the scene, oh no, it's not plugged in, and your wish is granted. And Now he's Tom Hanks. I give this movie credit. It wastes no time. All of that is the first 10 minutes.
I mean, the entire point of this movie is you have to be specific with your wishes.
Yes, always, always be specific with your wishes. Always. The devil's in the details, as it were. He didn't say how big. He didn't say, you know, it's up to the interpretation of the wish granter.
Well, I mean, I don't know why he didn't say, I wish I were tall or something, you know?
I wish I was a little bit taller.
Yeah. He just wants to be a baller.
Yes.
But the thing is like, you know, he could have become a kaiju or something, you know?
Yeah. I wish I was a foot taller than I am right now. Boom, done. This movie wouldn't happen. But because now that he is full adult Tom Hanks, his mother no longer recognizes him and thinks that he has kidnapped and done something to her child. It's kind of heartbreaking. He goes, you know, he goes to where the carnival was. The carnival's gone. He goes home. He tries to explain things to his mother, who is like pulling a knife on him. Where's my son? What did you do to him? Help police.
The movie glosses over it, but he spends the entire time telling his mom he's been kidnapped.
Yeah. And that he'll be home soon. He'll be home in a month. They're treating me well. They let me go outside.
It's like camp.
Yeah.
You know, and so the mom, like, absolutely believes he's been kidnapped. And, like, what does he say when he comes back home at the end of the movie?
Like, you would... And isn't it a bit, confusing in a way that, you know, these supposed kidnappers aren't asking for any kind of ransom?
Yeah, what's he gonna say they kidnapped him for?
These presumably adults kidnapping a 12-year-old child just for the fun of it? Did they do things to him? Again, you know, it's a lot of questions that this movie doesn't want to answer because it's not justifiable to the plot. So, like, we barely see the mother for most of the movie. It's like, after that opening freak out, it's like we see her maybe once or twice before the end of the movie, and she's like interacting with Billy, saying, you know, you miss him, I miss him too, don't worry, your son's coming home soon, I just know it. Who knows what kind of mental breakdowns this mother has gone through for this month. And this whole movie takes place over the course of a month. Because originally, after he's able to convince his best friend that he is who he is, they sing their little song. They end up going to the public records office to try to get information on every carnival that has passed through town and where they're going. And it says it will take them 6 weeks, 4 weeks if you're lucky. So, like, that seems to be the main focus of the movie, is Josh and him and Billy trying to originally try to find the Zoltar machine, but we never really check back with the mom. Which, you know, again, this movie doesn't seem to care about what this mother is going through.
Yeah, and we see, like, at one point, his face is on the milk carton. And that's just so tragic.
Yeah. I don't know if they still do that anymore, but that was like a thing back in the 80s.
Yeah, they don't.
Missing people on milk cartons, because everybody has milk. So someone should see the face on the milk carton. So eventually they realize that if he's going to be an adult for the next month or so, he's going to need a job. He's going to need a place to live, because there's nowhere for him to go. The beginning of the movie, we see that he's really into computer games. So he takes a data entry position at a toy company. And this starts his meteoric rise up the corporate ladder. The head of the company eventually catches him at FAO Schwartz. Oh, the old New York FAO Schwartz. I miss you, FAO Schwartz.
I never got to go.
There's like one FAO Schwartz that I know of, and that's like in Midway Airport. And it's not anywhere close to what this is. It's like FAO Schwartz in name only. So anyway, Josh is playing around with the toys with the other kids. He runs into the head of the company. This is where we get the famous heart and soul chopsticks piano scene that everybody knows from the movie. And he says, well, you're good at playing with toys. You know what the kids like. You know what you have your, you know why our toys aren't selling. And he eventually is promoted to vice president of trying to figure out what the official title is, but anyway, he's promoted to being basically a toy tester. This is where we end up meeting Elizabeth Perkins's character Susan and her boyfriend Paul, played by John Hurd. It's a weird relationship that those two have, because clearly neither one is in love with the other, and neither one really cares. Like, they're clearly only together to get ahead in corporate America. Like Paul even makes a reference that Susan has slept with many people in many positions in the company, and like he's okay with that. That he's just the next in the line, and she just kind of snaps back at him, I'm not that person anymore. Like, that's not what happened. It's like, I'm not that person anymore, which I don't think that's even, that whole scene has aged well.
I would agree with that.
Yeah, that's part of this movie I forget. Again, when you're watching this movie as a kid, there's certain parts of this movie that you don't get until you come back and watch this as an adult. So in the big meeting, since he's now like a toy tester now, he is testing their new product, which is a toy of a skyscraper that turns into a robot, because Transformers are in right now, so it's their new transforming toy. And he says, yeah, this toy sucks. No kid wants to play with a building.
It also seems to be falling apart a lot while he's playing with it.
Well, it's not a mock-up. It's a demo. It's not really the final product. At least that's what we're trying to get through in this one. But yeah, they don't seem to have the best manufacturing, as it were. And he comes up with a different idea for a different kind of transforming toy. And everyone there loves it. And it's just, this starts the jealousy between Josh and Paul. Who is this guy? Where did he come from? He came out of nowhere. No one comes out of nowhere. Going up the corporate ladder quicker than lightning. Find out who this guy is. And he doesn't, instantly jealous. Especially since, like I said, Josh just showed up. He's been on the job 1 week, and he's been promoted from data entry clerk to vice president in charge of toy marketing. The relationship between Paul and Susan kind of break apart at this point, and at the corporate party, Susan decides that she's going to move on and starts flirting with Josh, kind of going home with him. Very much, I am here to sleep with you. Why are you not sleeping with me? Like, she makes it very obvious. I'm very lonely and vulnerable right now. It would be terrible if someone took advantage of that. Again, that is a very cringe scene. And a scene that has not aged well.
No. Of course, the weird thing is that they get back to his apartment and she's like, okay, this is kind of weirding me out. And she ends up having a good time with him and nothing happens, which is good.
Yeah, I mean, there's the joke. It's like, you know, oh, you want to sleep over? Great, I'm on top. To a woman who is blatantly trying to sleep with this man. And of course, since he is the mind of a child and the body of a grown man, he is referring to bunk beds.
She should realize that something is up.
She thinks Josh is married and has another family.
Okay, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about, like, mental state. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, we know that he's a 12-year-old in a grown man's body. But imagine if you just came across this guy as an adult. You would kind of wonder if there were, you know, some issues there.
A learning disability, maybe?
Or something, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I guess that she doesn't really think about it because, like, well, he's like a vice president in a company, you know, and all that kind of stuff. But I think today it would hit a little different because people might wonder a little bit more. But, I mean, I don't think anybody's first thing is like, are you a magically altered child? But...
because all this guy has is toys in his apartment. He plays with toys all day.
And he doesn't have any kind of, like, adult-level social skills that you would expect for someone the age he is. You know? She's very blatantly hitting on him and suggesting sex, and he doesn't understand that. You know?
Yeah.
That's, I think today, it would be chalked up to something different. But, and that's not necessarily a bad thing. But, I just think that she's missing a lot of potential cues that would, you know, lead her down a different path, not necessarily magically altered child, of course. But, you know, I do wonder kind of if this movie was written today, what her reaction would be written like, you know?
Yeah. One could think, of, you know, from an outsider point of view, maybe he's just ace and not into sex in general.
Yeah, I mean, that would also be a valid reading, and it would be fine, you know? But I think we kind of understand more about, you know, that there are some people who are just kind of not into various things, you know? But it is kind of interesting that because she's come off of a very abusive relationship with John Hurt's character, that the fact that that Josh immediately doesn't want to take advantage of her, even though she's kind of down for it because
it's Tom Hanks.
Well, I mean, yeah, it's Tom Hanks, but that's kind of, you get the feeling that that's kind of the culture at the office.
Like I said, it's already established that at least one, if not both of them, have slept with multiple people at the office to get the positions that they have.
Yeah, and I mean, John Lovett says the thing to Tom Hanks, like, on his first day at work, like, hey, if you just talk to that woman over there, she'll wrap her legs around you and squeeze until you can't breathe. And Tom Hanks is like, oh, I'll stay away from her then. You know, like,
yeah, he doesn't get what John Lovitz is trying to say. You know, she's down for anything. Yeah, that's the ticket.
Yeah. And the thing is that that's a bit, you just get the feeling that that's the culture in that company. And you have a feeling that maybe the Elizabeth Perkins character is used to maybe kind of just having to deal with the new guy on the block being the person that she kind of has to, you know, be sweet to.
Yeah. I mean, again, he's a vice president now. So you would think to get in a higher position, she would need to butter up to the brand new vice president.
I mean, it's kind of sad because she seems to be very capable. And she's not a vice president of anything.
Yeah, I mean, let's probably sexism. It is the 1980s. But then again, it's sexism now, too.
Yeah.
It like you said, this is probably the culture of that office, that you just, to get ahead, you need to give head.
Yeah.
One thing I do like is the Josh's quote office full of toys. There are so many recognizable 80s toys here. Lots of Masters of the Universe toys. The one toy that he's playing with, I actually had, which is a blue Silverhawks bird, Stronghold. I had that as a kid. And I remember seeing that in the movie when I saw the movie on cable as a kid and I had the toy. Like, oh, hey, my toy is in the movie. And seeing this again years later, hey, I had that toy as a kid. You know, I don't know if any of the toys in the movie were anything that you had besides, like, the Barbie doll or something.
Nope.
The rivalry between John Hurt's character and Tom Hanks' character coming to this blow where they play, you know, badminton. And Josh is blatantly cheating and...
No,
I mean, Paul. Paul is blatantly cheating, and Josh is calling him out on it. Like, no, I'm not cheating. I didn't say that. I didn't do this. And just punches him in the face because Josh is now a threat to him. Josh is essentially his superior when just, you know, a few weeks ago, he was just a data entry clerk. And it was Josh that ridiculed his proposal of the skyscraper robot. And now presumably has the affections of his girlfriend.
I mean, maybe treat her better, man.
Yeah, I mean, he, like you said, he's very, not physically abusive, but he's very verbally abusive to her. Like, he's listening to music on his radio, and she wants to change the station, and he's like, don't change my radio.
He is such a douche.
Yeah, I mean, it's the 80s, I mean... Yeah, again, like I said, he's every 80s villain, almost. I think it's time. We've danced around it enough. Let's just get to the one that we kind of want to talk about here. Josh and Susan have their date. They go to a different carnival. They go dancing. And then they go back to her place. And she takes her blouse off. So yeah, they have sex.
And this is just after his 13th birthday.
Yeah, we actually see his 13th birthday. So essentially this is a grown woman having sex with a grown man with the mind of a 13-year-old boy. A 13-year-old boy that has never seen boobs before. Again, earlier in the movie, Josh and Billy are talking about, hey, if you can, so in, you know, this girl in their class that, you know, you can look down her shirt and see her boobs. Like you said, after they're having their relationship and then finding out that your boyfriend is actually a 13-year-old boy in a grown man's body, how do you cope with that?
I mean, I'm surprised that she didn't immediately, like, lose her mind. I mean, and the weirdest thing is at the end of the movie, you know, she accepts that he is 13 and, you know, whatever, and she goes, hey, come look me up in 10 years.
Yeah, she's still into it. Which,
yeah. That may be the most creepy part of it, because, I mean, you cannot fault her for what she didn't know about.
And she does fall in love with the guy. You know, even, yes, this is still a 13-year-old in a grown man's body, but he's actually a decent guy. You know, he doesn't talk down to her. He treats her with respect. He talks about how amazing she is and that he lets her lead the presentation of the new toy he developed. Granted, it's because he's not really that good at public speaking. But during the movie, he comes up with a toy idea for an interactive comic book with different story. Basically, a choose-your-own-adventure, but a computer-type game, which, for 1988, not a bad idea, but, you know, we have that so often now in video games, ahead of the curve, as it were. But he lets her take the lead in the presentation. So it shows that he has vast respect for her. So yeah, even if it's not, you know, take everything else away, at the heart, Josh is a good guy. Obviously immature, but still a decent guy.
I mean, you cannot fault her at the first part of the movie, you know, when she's getting into a relationship with him.
Mm-hmm.
Because there is absolutely no way she could know what this is.
Yeah.
Nobody's going to look at this and go like, I wonder if this is a, you know, magically altered child. You know? As far as she knows, this is a capable adult who is a vice president at the company she works at.
Young at heart, because he likes playing with toys and is just a decent dude.
But as far as she knows, there is nothing wrong with this relationship.
Yeah.
Now, you can kind of falter at the end of the movie where she's like, hey, I understand I had a relationship with a 12/13-year-old. Look me up when you're of age and we'll try again. That's a bit weird.
When they find the Zoltar machine, he even asks her, come with me, make a wish and be 13 again and we can still be together. To
And
which.
she's right. She's like, no, you could not pay me enough to be 13 again. Which shows she has some brain in her body.
Yeah. But there's, there's not much else you can do at that point. So she eventually agrees to take him home, and we never see the transformation back. It kind of cuts back to her. She looks down, she looks back up, and all of a sudden, Tom Hanks is gone, and it's Kit again. I don't know how to read that face that Elizabeth Perkins is giving here, looking at this child, knowing that she slept with this kid. Like, where does she go from here? Does she, I don't know, maybe she'll try to find or rationalize it in her mind. I don't know. Like, there's so much in this movie, and there's, you mentioned it, but this movie raises too many questions that it just does not want to answer.
Yeah, we never see his reunion with his mother.
We hear it though, but that's all it is. Again, what was this mother going through? We at one point, Josh writes a letter saying mom and dad, but we never see a father.
Well, actually we do. It's the basketball coach. Because the his best friend, when he's on the, when Josh first goes to see him to be like, hey, I'm Tom Hanks now. The first thing that happens is his friend starts screaming, Coach Baskin, Coach Baskin. So that's his dad.
Oh, I never got that.
Yeah, it's kind of subtle in the movie, but that would be his dad, I'm assuming.
I don't know. I mean, how would you feel if for a month your child is missing? You get letters from your child saying they're taking care of you. Who's taking care of you? What's been going on? What did they do to you? Why did they kidnap you in the first place? What did they want? And they just let you go just to let you go.
Yeah, and he never has a good explanation for like where he was or who he was with or.
And Elizabeth Perkins' character, she's just sitting there in her car the entire time. Like, wouldn't the mother run out and look at this woman like, what have you done to my son?
And I mean, you know, don't question too much into that, Mom.
She did everything with him.
Yeah.
It's like he goes into his house. We hear him, Mom, I'm home. We hear the mom saying, oh, thank God you're alive. And then the movie ends. It feels weird because the movie gives us that everything goes back to normal. The final scene in the movie is Josh and Billy just walking, having a kid conversation as if the events of the movie never happened. Which, like, I don't know. Maybe, again, as a kid, I didn't question this stuff. But as an adult coming back to this movie, it's just, there's too many questions. Too many questions that this movie has no interest in answering.
Yeah, I think too much about stuff to kind of enjoy when things like that happen, you know?
Yeah. Like the dear listener, I know we speed ran through the movie, but there's not really much else to talk about here. I've wanted to talk about this movie for a while, but coming back to the movie, like the more interesting things I'm finding about the movie is the stuff that the movie doesn't want to talk about.
Yeah, that's true.
If he was, I don't know, sending money to his mom or something, but we never see that. All he's doing is spending his money on toys and arcade machines and a soda machine. His first paycheck, he spent it all on pizza because he's a freaking kid.
Yeah.
Like, as a kid, I loved this movie. As an adult, it's like, oh my. Not, again, taking away all of the cringe and questionable antics in the movie. Take away all the cringe stuff. Take away the fact that this is a 30-year-old woman sleeping with a grown man with the mind of a child. Take all of that away. And there are so many questions that this movie doesn't want to answer for. This movie doesn't want to answer any a lot of the question. Like, again, what has been the mother's, what's going on with the mother? I mean, this could have ended really bad with the mother, who knows what, over the supposed loss of her child.
Yeah.
And this movie just glosses over it like it means nothing. I don't know. I guess because watching this movie, you think of it like a kid. So, oh, hey, kid grows up, kids gets everything he wants. Yay. Coming back and watching this movie as an adult, and you think like an adult, and it's just, I don't know, completely different movie almost.
Yeah.
So, does this movie have the magic? That's hard for me to say because there are still parts of this movie I like. It's a good concept. It's just, it was a better concept when I was a kid watching this movie versus an adult watching this movie. So, oh, it's gonna hurt me to say it, but I'm gonna say no magic.
I'm going to kind of disagree.
Go ahead.
There's a little bit of magic here, and almost all of it is Tom Hanks.
Yeah, I'll agree with that because Tom Hanks makes this movie. And I, reiterating what we talked about earlier in the episode, if this was any other actor, this movie wouldn't work. It's just there's something about Tom Hanks perfectly playing this child in an adult's body, even when the kid is scared. We kind of skipped over when that first night in the hotel where he hears everyone arguing in the hallways and he's just sitting there cuddling himself as a scared child. Tom Hanks plays that scared child perfectly.
Yeah, him calling out for his mom, just heartbreaking.
Yeah. This movie would not work without Tom Hanks, and if this movie does have magic, it is 100% on Tom Hanks. Next week, we are taking a look at The Black Hole. This was Disney's attempt to ride the popularity of Star Wars, and I would assume the Star Trek the Motion Picture would have been out by then too. But yeah, this is Disney trying to ride the popularity wave of Star Wars with their own space opera movie. Yeah, long before they ever bought Lucasfilm, long before they had the partnership with Star Tours, this is Disney's attempt at a Star Wars movie. Yeah, we're gonna see how that turned out. So come back next week for The Black Hole, and we'll talk to you all next time. Bye.
Bye.
Don't let the magic stop here. Join our conversations on Facebook, Instagram, and Threads at Rewatching the Magic. We are on the X, formerly known as Twitter, at Rewatch the Magic. And new episodes are available every week at rewatchingthemagic.podbean.com. Remember, the magic is for everyone. It only stops if you let it.
Podcasts are fun,
but there's work to be done.
We encourage you to get involved. Here are some organizations we support.
The American Civil Liberties Union fights for the constitutional rights of all Americans. Find them at aclu.org.
The National Network of Abortion Funds helps people find access to safe abortion services. Their site is abortionfunds.org.
The Trevor Project provides a 24/7 crisis helpline for LGBTQ youth and education services for schools on LGBTQ issues. They can be found at thetrevorproject.org.
Or find a way to help in your area.